Can everybody hear the Shema?
Yeah.
Shema.
Ma. Ma.
Shan't you Shema?
Okay.
One thing.
Shmut up.
Shmut
up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love thy Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk with them. And when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates. And it shall come to pass, if you shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thine oil. And I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. Take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, that there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, unless you perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you. Therefore shall you lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall teach them your children, speaking to them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt write them upon the doorpost of thine house and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied, and the days of your children in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout the generations, and that they put upon the fringe of the borders a riband of blue, and it shall be unto you for a fringe, that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord, and do them, and that you seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you used to go aborn, that you may remember and do all my commandments, and be holy unto your God. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God.
An interesting thing, remember that the word Shema or Shema means hear with understanding. We are so undisciplined in our hearing that the minute or so that it took to read the Shema, how many different agendas did you go through in your minds? How many different flashes and other things entered in? The goal of the Shema is to be able to so cause you to be able to focus on that you would hear nothing else just for that brief period of time. Now, I was talking to Michael about the talents of the ancients in terms of memorizing and understanding. One of the things that, you know, we've talked about before is if you close your eyes and try to visualize something, you know, a light bulb is usually easy, how long can you hold that light bulb in focus? And for most of you, it's a matter of a tenth of a second or just a little bit. And the reason is because we are bombarded by stimuli constantly. Somebody called this the multi-generation, anyway, because we have inputs from so many sources. When movies first came out, and another example of this, when movies first came out, they may have a scene that lasted 3 minutes. There was a dialogue or a scene that lasted for a long, long, maybe more, maybe 5 minutes. And the camera didn't move, the camera angle didn't move. It was a scene that focused, and there was only the dialogue between partners. And in that time, then people could, that was satisfactory. Now, today, especially at the leading edges of the media, in MTV and other things, an image doesn't stay on the screen even a, you know, even a second. When I was involved in doing the movie stuff, we had a rule of thumb that you should never have a scene, and this was, you know, 20 years ago, as opposed to when the movies first came out at the turn of the century or right after, it was 3 to 5 minutes. 20 years ago, you couldn't, but the rule of thumb was that an audience wouldn't pay attention to a scene if it was longer than 30 seconds. Now, an audience won't pay attention to a scene if it's longer than 3 seconds. It soon will be the audience won't pay attention to a scene if it's longer than a tenth of a second. And what that does is it causes us who are not of this world to be subject to all of that in terms of how we perceive. And it's almost like we have to pull ourselves out of that to be able to hear with understanding. Now, on the opposite side of the coin, the goodness of that is, if you will, or the benefits of that quick cuts, etc., are it takes them less time to perceive vanity or futility. So, I mean, it causes you not to be able to focus or hear anything, but by the same token, it causes you to be able to perceive vanity quicker. And that's the important thing. So, next time we do the Shema, I want you to be conscious of your mind. Let me put it another way. Be conscious of your mind's response to the words. See how long it takes before you're thinking about a deal, or you're thinking about a problem, or you're thinking about, you know, your job, or you're thinking about whatever. How long is it? Is it a second? Tenth of a second?
It's funny because I was thinking, what about the guys back
they think we were blithering idiots.
But that's what was going through my mind. Yeah. Here's
something about how fast it forgets.
Well, that's another aspect of it. Again, it's hard for us to believe. You know, the Talmud is 64 volumes. To be a member of the Sanhedrin, they had to memorize the Talmud. They had to memorize the Torah.
I can't remember a proverb.
Genesis 14. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elisar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made war. Now, remember, I've told you so often in the scriptures, whenever it says, and it came to pass, it means something stupendous is about to happen. If it's evil, it's extremely evil. And if it's good, it's extremely good from God's standpoint. So, and it came to pass is always a hint that you ought to pay attention, even if it's a bunch of words and names that you don't understand. It means it's a hint that you need to seek wisdom about the meaning of what's about to be said. I mean, this sounds, you know, so what? And you need to start digging. It's just like it, the same, whenever it says laws, ordinances, commandments, principles, and then it says statutes. Well, all the law, the ordinances, the commandments, the principles can all be accomplished by someone. But you'll see the statutes throughout the scriptures, and you'll find out whenever the word statutes is used, it means that you cannot do it, and nobody can do it. And yet, and you're saying, the statute says to do this, and I can't do it. And so the purpose, it's like the linchpin to even the strongest among men to cause the law and the statutes to shut up their mouth, to come to the end of themselves. Now, of course, we can do what the Baptists do. We can just go through the law and selectively decide which ones we're going to if we have no hormones, which ones we're going to anyways, so we're looking at a mystery here. And it came to pass in the days of Amraphel. What happened? No, let me read this. It came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these made, and again, the word nations there is an interesting word. It shouldn't be translated nations. It's goyim in the Hebrew.
Gentiles.
So it's Gentiles.
Gentiles.
That these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, with Shinab, king of Admah, and Shemaber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar.
So the first...
The four made war with the five. Okay? And Abraham isn't in the midst yet. So what it's... There's all kinds of great theory about this, but it's one of them says that the four lusts made war with the five senses. All these guys are going to lose, and the seed of Abraham is going to win. But the other thing says that just at the beginning now of Israel, there's all these four guys we just talked about: Amraphel, Chedorlaomer, Tidal, and Arioch. They all are in the process of beginning this warfare. So it was at the end of Israel. At the end of Israel, the four were Babylon, Media, Greece, and Rome. So at the beginning, these four were typified by these city-states. At the end, the four were typified by the massive nations. In all cases, including the ones in which we're talking about, the five senses made war with the four desires, or the four basic desires of man. In all cases, the thing to see is that it's always the seed that comes out the winner. It's never the ones who are even in the battlefield. You understand? It's your warfare. God could have said to Abraham back here at this point, and did in spirit, "I speak quietly to my servant." It's saying to him that his warfare is completed. In quietness and in confidence he shall be saved. Now, if Abraham had continued to know that, I mean, the promise would have been born instantly. But he kept screwing up. And the reason Abraham kept screwing up was to give you hope. You know, as it talks about the God of Israel and the God of Jacob, well, if remember the progression? Jacob was after the flesh and his name was changed to Israel. Well, the God of Israel doesn't do me a damn bit of good because I can't meet his standards. But I can meet the standards of the God of Jacob. All the God of Jacob did was just sort of hang around. Jacob just sort of hung around. God did the rest. When you start meeting the standards of the God of Israel, there's only one that can meet those standards. So you have to read this with understanding. You understand me? Okay.
I thought Abraham was the one who just hung around. Jacob was the one who was always listening to
God. Well, I mean, the end result is that all that Jacob did was fight and get things wrong. He got them wrong worse than Abraham did.
So he was just hanging around.
He's basically just hung around. He didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
it's almost like a reflex. Hit somebody, you hit back.
Amraphel, guess what, folks? Guess who Amraphel is?
Oh, isn't he king of Babylon?
He's Nimrod.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Okay. Well, what lust is this guy?
What?
What lust is Amraphel or Nimrod?
What lust? What lust?
What desire? One of the four lusts?
Of all the stuff I talked about, that's the only thing he heard.
Well, lust gets my attention.
You know what lust means? It doesn't mean desires. It just means wanting more than you have.
Oh, well.
In anything. Remember Nimrod. Nimrod was, in effect, the king of the world at the time. He was the controller, the king of the known world.
Was he as powerful as Solomon?
He was more powerful.
Wow.
Sure. He Nimrod, the word Nimrod in the Hebrew means rebel, rebel. And it's the Talmud says this great thing about Nimrod. It says he, what's how did they put it? Just a minute. He led the world in rebellion against himself.
Weird.
Against who he truly was. That's why in the New Testament it says,
no, that's why you said that his big thing about his big contribution to humanity was self-seeking.
Right.
I mean, it's...
He led the world in self-seeking. No one has ever compared to Nimrod. The father, Abraham's natural father was Terah, and that was Nimrod's high priest. Nimrod was childless. Abraham was his heir apparent. For all the reasons we've talked about, he got ticked off at Abraham, kicked Abraham out, and now it is 60-20, it's some 30 years after Nimrod kicked Abraham out. And Nimrod has been starting to hear about Abram in his activities from his messengers. And so under the laws that existed in that time, Nimrod had never legally disinherited Abraham. And so according to the Talmud, the purpose of this visit, the reason that Amraphel, Arioch, Chedorlaomer, Elam came down to the promise was to disinherit Abraham formally. Now,
how do you do that?
Huh? By proclamation. Or by defeat. Or by defeat. This is hard to understand. He met Abraham, allegedly, in this scene, and was amazed at his learning. And according to Hebrew legend, he then offered to Abraham, he said the following words, "I came here for the purposes of disinheriting you. But because of your great wisdom, you have now been brought back in as the next, my successor." And Abraham said the following, "Let it be Haram, accursed to me. I cannot profit because of my learning." And that's what started this war that we're about to see.
Why did he go after these guys? Just ticked off?
Yeah, these guys were no, they were at this time allies. Oh. If he wiped his Abraham's allies out, then there would be no, the fight would be over. Oh. I mean, do you understand the importance of this?
Yeah, we start out feeling the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, our senses are our allies there.
And we start out thinking that both our senses and our desires are our allies.
Yeah.
And even after all of a long, long time of learning and study of Torah and study the mystery, a process begins in us that we say that the king of this Nimrod, this evil one, comes and says to the true us, Aha! Now you deserve me. And we kick out our counselors and learners and divorce them and send them, exile them across the sea. We refuse to profit from the wisdom and the learning. I can't tell you how big of a test that is. Can you sense it?
I feel like that's exactly what I've been going through with you. I mean, in the confrontations that we've had about work, it's been me having to discard the things that I thought I knew.
Okay, now this interesting thing comes. Let's go to Psalm 37. This is Psalm 37, verse 12, 13, and 14, 15, and 16. Well, this section of the Psalms, according to the rabbis, is what they're referring to this meeting that Amraphel and Nimrod and his buddies had, okay? The wicked plotteth against the just. Again, that's what happens. It's Christ in you who's the... Abraham is simply here a picture of Christ within you. The seed at rest. Battled by the four desires and the five senses. Never against anything else. Our battle is no longer against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual wickedness in these high places. Never is anybody else at fault. Never is there anything against you except yourself. Now, this Nimrod, he's the chief rebel against himself. That's why you are the chief of sinners, because you are the chief at self-seeking. That's why the cross is necessary. That's why you must give up the right to yourself. That's what the cross means. Now, these senses and desires and these are coming against, just like they did here against Abraham. Listen, the wicked plotteth against the just and gnasheth upon him with his teeth. The Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. His day arrived the minute you understand this. The minute you stop giving the desires or the senses any credence, then Christ in you is laughing at the battle. You understand? This is the meaning of this scripture. This is the meaning of Genesis. It's a revelation of the victory of the seed in you over against all opponents. Well, let's go up to 10. For yet a little while, and the wicked one shall not be. If you in your Bible it just says wicked, you should change it. In the Hebrew it says wicked one. For yet a little while, and the wicked one shall not be. In other words, I want it to be the rarest thing in the universe when you are the subject of your own sentence. Can you see? Can you sense what kind of freedom that would be? Yet a little while, and the wicked one within you, within this temple, shall not be, because he's gone to the cross. You've seen his death. You can laugh at him and laugh him to scorn. For yet a little while, and the wicked one shall not be. Thou shalt diligently consider his place, and it shall not be. Can you imagine the freedom of that? But the meek shall inherit the earth. Who is the meek? Christ in you, the hope of glory. The word meek, you remember? Shall I remember? Shall I remember you what meek means in the Hebrew and Greek? It's a lion walking through the middle of this body. And he doesn't take your throat off. But he has the power to do so. Not some milquetoast character of Christianity. The meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. What's the abundance of peace? It's the absence of againstness. To know that there is nothing in the universe against you. You can rest. You refuse to take it back into your hands. You lean not on your own number of understanding. But you know that by his position within you, you can afford to be in the position of abundance of peace without regard to any activity that you do. The wicked plotteth against the just. Now, they say, this is what this rabbis say. I'll give you chapter and verse if you want, but the rabbis say that this is what they're talking about. This is the first time the wicked are plotting against the just, because Abram was the first just. The wicked plotteth against the just and gnasheth upon him with his teeth. The Lord shall laugh at him, for he seeth that his day is coming. The wicked have drawn out the sword and have bent their bow to cast down the poor and the needy and to slay such as be of upright conversation. Their sword shall enter into their own heart.
They do that.
And their bows shall be broken.
They had it turned around wrong.
You want to know what the Gospel of Thomas says about that scripture?
Yeah.
It says that when they, meaning Adam, crucified Christ, they stuck a sword into their own heart.
When they did that.
And Adam then died on the cross by its own hand.
And the bows are, I think earlier you said it was power?
Yeah, whatever you consider power or strength.
They had some pretty powerful bows back then, too.
357 Magnum bows.
You got it.
Dirty Harry bows.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're better than could be made today. Real short ones.
A little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholdeth the upright, or the righteous. Well, now let's go to Micah. Now we'll see this great scripture in Micah.
What chapter?
Chapter 4. Verse 11. Now also many nations are gathered against thee that say, let her be defiled, and let our eye look upon Zion. But they know not the thoughts of the Lord. They know not the thoughts of the Lord. They know not the thoughts of the Lord. Who's the they? The senses or the desires? The carnal mind is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can it be. It's an enemy of God. Can you get that in your mind? They know not the thoughts of the Lord, neither understand they his counsel. That's why God said, abandon yourself. If you want to, the first thing that Christ said is abandon yourself. Take no thought for your life. Take no thought for tomorrow. Neither understand they his counsel, for he shall gather them at the as the sheaves into the floor. Now that's what God has done to these nations. He's down in the promised land at the threshing floor, and he seduced them into coming into the the threshing floor so they can be threshed as the sheaves. Now, in Ezekiel, it says he puts a hook in them and pulls them into the threshing floor. Now, of course, I mean, the Dallas Theological Seminary says that it's Gog and Magog, and that's Russia, because it sounds like Magog sounds like possibly it starts with an M, and so it must be Moscow and all this horse shit.
That's an English. Put your right foot in.
And he's going to gather them by, and they're going to come and attack Israel, and that's what the last thing in Israel was. It was the beginning of the blah blah blah.
That's what it's all about.
Blah 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 blah. Now listen, listen. Who are you? Spiritually, you're the daughter of Zion, the bride of Christ. Now arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion. You are the threshing instrument.
Wow.
Arise and thresh, O daughter of Zion, for I will make thine horn iron, make thy hooves brass. Thou shalt beat in pieces many people, and I will consecrate their gain unto the Lord, and their substance unto the Lord of the whole earth.
You said last time we met what consecrate really meant. What does it mean? Do away with? Is it right? Or?
Well, means consecrate means to, the word literally means to devote for some purpose.
Oh, okay.
To devote totally, to devote without any holdback. Right. Now, do you understand what he's saying? If, let's accept for a minute that these ancient guys are right. God is gathering the senses in each of us. He's gathering the senses and the desires to a place for battle. And we're going to study in great detail this battle as we continue. The senses don't win, the desires don't win. There's only one that wins. That's, remember, a long time ago, somebody asked me what the purpose of sports was. Mm-hmm. Why did God have sporting events and sports? And why are there sportsmen and races?
We had some great answers too.
And they got it. They had these great discussions of sportsmanship. And I said, that's a bunch of horse shit. There's sporting events to show you one thing and one thing only, that there's only one winner. And it ain't you.
Tell you about a dream I had the other night. I dreamt that we were on this big cabin cruiser kind of boat that had those windows that have kind of like a chicken wire in them when it's going to be under a lot of pressure. And we were out on water, and all of a sudden these people were hysterical and trying desperately to get inside, and they were like, it was like looking at those films of Nazi experiments where they're killing people in a really slow, agonizing way. These people are hitting the glass, and there was one guy who just kept slamming his head into the glass, and it was like all his skin was completely against the glass, and it started shattering just from the repeated pressure of him hitting it. And all those people... In the dream, I realized that all the people who were hitting the glass were outside and trying desperately to get in. They were all our parents. And I woke up and went, oh. It was just a really strange feeling.
What do you think about it?
I thought it was just like the ark. It also made me realize how ready we are to cut them off without thinking that they really are out there as much in the world on fire as anyone else. It just really made me see how needy our parents are.
Well, also, I mean, the parents.
parents and hear, you know, what I see in just that those things have to be cut off. You know, the Board of Governors, the things that your parents, how you live with your parents even when they're not here by approval and you know, things like that, how they really are, how that is death. That is the death.
I told Darlene about it, and she said, you know, it made even more sense to her that on the ark, God closed the door. It's like, when, you know, up against that much frenzy and pain, you really couldn't do it yourself.
Well, I mean, again, every time you dream, again, if you believe the ancients, the dream, every character in the dream is an aspect of you. And we make grave errors when we start attributing the characters in the dream as someone else. It's an aspect of what's happening in here. That's the meaning of the dream, the true meaning. Well, it's what she said. You've got to cut off the Board of Governors. It's inside you. No matter how much they desire to be in, they are excluded from the kingdom.
Yeah.
I mean, the kingdom is for only that which proceeded from God can return to God. It's only for the promises of God are not to the seeds as of many, but to the one seed, which is Christ. It is the exclusivity. And some, if they desire, we have compassion, putting out our hand, hating even the garment spotted by the flesh. But you can't put out your hand unless you hate the garment spotted by the flesh. You understand that?
Yeah.
If you put out your hand with a garment spotted by the flesh, then you'll be drawn into the fire without knowing it.
Yeah, it makes sense because it's seeing soul and not spirit.
Amen. That's what we are about. We are in discipleship so that you will learn to discern soul from spirit. So that's why movies or books that have any kind of writing that has any merit walks on that knife edge between soul and spirit, between eternal it has the danger of always falling into eternity. If it falls into eternity, it's death. But if it doesn't walk that knife edge, there's only death on the other side. So, it's that creative tension which causes life to be. The word Ebri is what it says, the word in the Hebrew. It means one from the region beyond. It means one from, in our terminology, would mean one from the twilight zone. One that has no inheritance here. One that has no part of this. One who is a alien in a bizarre land. One who knows that this land is not its home. One who doesn't try to change the land, he tries to get out of the land. He sees the vanity of it that will always continue and go on towards. If you try to change it, your garment is spotted by the flesh and you'll be taken into the flesh. You speak the word, instant, in season or out of season. But don't be deceived into trying to change your workplace, your way of doing business, your partners, your parents, your wives, your brothers, your sisters. You'll be deceived. You'll fall into the trap of the God of this world, and he will draw you into his clutches, and you will be destroyed, I promise you. and you will be alone. The Ibri, one from the region beyond. The real you came from heaven. He is here only for a time of testing to return. This is not your home. Don't give it any breath. Don't give it any importance. You use the world, but don't abuse it. You use it as a hammer, but you don't give it any breath. You don't try to change it. You don't try to take sides in alliances or issues. We're not politicians. All politics sucks. All politics is evil. All politics is, by definition, alliance and self-seeking. We're not conservative or liberal. We're not Republicans or Democrats. We're not black nor white, Jew nor Greek, male or female. We have no label. I am. That revelation. Be prepared for it. But because everything in the universe, going into it, you know everything in the universe is against it. If suffering comes, you don't think it's strange. You don't try to convince anybody. You don't try to argue anybody. You don't try to make converts. You live. And because you live, others around you will be drawn into it. Not by the wisdom of your words, not by the enticement of your subtle alliances and souls seeking after their own kind. They will be drawn into the mystery by your steadfastness. By their perception of you being meek. Do you understand how compelling that is to a human being? You can't take your eyes off. It's a train wreck. You know what I mean? Waiting for something. Everybody senses something's going to explode and they don't just know when.
Yeah, that's the tension of weakness.
This is the first time I've really felt that, like, we're this group of people that's, like, literally aliens. Like, we're from another place, another planet. I mean, we're not. I mean, it's like you're getting your marching orders. And you've been sent from somewhere else. And it's neat. It's free. It's like, who cares about anything?
Yeah. And you talk to somebody, and for me, I forget how foreign this stuff is or how unusual it is. It becomes, I mean, because it has become a way of life, or it is becoming a way of life, I'm just, you know, when people don't understand, I'm like, oh, why don't they understand? It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Yeah.
No.
That's the thing about, you know, if they know God, they'll hear you. If they don't, they won't.
Me. Go to any room. Go to any gathering of people in the universe, in any language, in any culture, and tell them, number one, it's finished. Number two, they are the Antichrist. Number three, all men died at the cross. Number four, their Adam name is simply a Satan's deception. I mean, there's so many. That God doesn't love you. That the human race is God's sperm cells. That there's nothing right in the world.
I did run.
They got our title.
Oh, you don't understand.
Just don't run. Just.
I mean, that's all I've ever done for 20 years.
coming out going to have some of that in it?
Have you read
no.
it or
no? Oh, God, no, they won't. That's, you can't do that. That's like the faux pas,
Sure.
Well, I'm just telling you.
It's like letting somebody edit.
I mean, ask Ed if he would let one of the, if he was writing about something, if he'd let him read the story before it was published.
Sometimes I'll call him
and
go with
the facts. Well, I mean, yeah, sure. Fact checker.
Yeah. Just the facts, man.
Let's not like read it.
This is 40, the story was 45 pages long.
I mean, is he going to publish that long, or is he going to have to edit it?
Who knows?
Oh.
That's what he submitted. No, that's not excerpts. That's what he submitted to the...
No, I'm talking about just doing a little bit of it for one issue and then part two.
No, I don't think they'll do that.
They won't do that.
Oh yeah, I don't. I mean, they may decide to kill it. We don't know. I mean, let's not pay any attention to the story. It's gone. It's history. It comes out. It comes out. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Into the void.
Into the void.
Doesn't matter anyway.
Well, it'll matter to you when people let you know, read it, and they find out you're associated with it.
You guys, I don't think a lot of people realize how well known this group already is.
Yeah, everybody laughed.
I know. Well, it's not just that. I mean, when Pal and I went out to Arlington. You know, we were getting the television thing, and he says, Ole Anthony, Trinity? Oh, yeah, I heard him on KLIF. I mean, that just unnerved me completely because, I mean, this guy was like, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, he was just random, just completely random. And then that's the way it gets. I mean, if you say who you are or where you're from, all of a sudden they know everything you stand for, everything, you know, and not. And, I mean, it's a weird thing.
And remember the levels of testing. Some of you may have forgotten. Let me remind you. First level of testing is what all men are subject to. It's simply entropy of life, things failing, everything failing in your life. Second level of testing is you begin the process of laying down your life for the brethren and having your idolatry run up against their idolatry. And then yet continuing. Those two are child's play. Third level of testing is when you are publicly identified with what we're about.
That's not fair because that's really wrong.
I don't want to know no more levels.
Fourth level of testing
you get your four to five.
Is when you become the speaker of what you're identified with.
It's really weird, I mean, in a sense, because it's like radio on a very small level. I mean, when you work for a certain station and you say, if people find out, sometimes they go, oh, that sucks. I hate that station. Why do you guys do, you know? And I mean, it's weird to think that that could happen with your whole life. I mean, you know.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, well, I'm serious, though. I mean, it's weird to think that, I mean, because, you know, that's everything we are.
Well, again, you must recognize that there are absolutely no allies in the universe. Is that you beginning to suspect that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
They will. I promise you.
Well, I know that, I mean, but in the real sense, they really don't care.
Well, but
they
I promise
care
you.
So they can protect themselves.
I promise you that what will happen in each of you is that no one will ever again ignore you. They'll be compelled in interest or they will immediately run.
Yep.
Take it, big guy.